Chapter 4. 241. Though there was little enough of Taranthus to be seen on the surface, the trio of armoured portals that broke the rocky promontory above the mines were imposing enough. Each was a keep, independent of the others above ground, a bastion of ruddy stone and dark metal built around a gate solid enough to withstand the simple weapons of the caravan. The guards of the outer towers, having witnessed the victory of the bearer of the word over those who had moved against him, had withdrawn into their mother town, locking down their fortifications to abandon the surface to the interlopers. The cost of the victory had been considerable. Some 40 slaves and half as many converts in all lost, several dozen of each injured, many unlikely to survive without expert attention and facilities. A price worth paying, in Cor Faron's view, to teach Lorgar the nature of the opposition he would now face if he wanted to confront the Covenant.
"What do we do now?"
Axata asked as he, Lorgar, and Cor Faron stood in the shade of the golden solar sails of two wagons, about half a kilometre from the closest barbican.
"We cannot breach Taranthus with fusils and spear hurlers."
"One of the sentry posts might prove an easier lair to prize open," said Cor Faron. "We will find heavier weapons within."
"And do we have the time?" the convert leader continued. "The Covenant have the means to speak on the air. Reinforcements from Varadesh will be here within 2 days."
To this, Cor Faron had no answer, save a glowering look. Lorgar was deep in thought, one finger held to his lips in contemplation. Standing right next to Axata, it was obvious how large he had become, half a head taller than the chieftain, and still showing no signs of his extraordinary growth abating. The bearer of the word had torn away the rags the slave had bound around his arms, tatters of cloth still caught in the thick scabs of his powers-gifted blood that sheathed his forearms. They fluttered in the wind like ribbons, flaking dried crimson like rust.
"We have all that we need already," declared Lorgar.
"Bring forward the shrine."
"We have nothing to break rock, nor melt or crack thick metal," argued Axata.
"Ramming the gate is pointless, if that is what you have in mind, and it would be folly to strand ourselves here in the attempt," said Cor Faron.
"There is no need to breach a gate that is already open," Lorgar said cryptically, raising a hand for the temple rig to advance. He directed a meaningful look at Cor Faron as he continued. "One voice shall suffice where the mightiest weapons falter." 242. Additional generators and speakers were brought aboard the great wagon of Cor Faron to boost the amplification of the pulpit's address system. The hiss of static set the dunes vibrating, and the rest of the caravan retreated a safe distance away in anticipation of Lorgar's booming address. Cor Faron and a handful of slaves remained to oversee the technicalities of running the device. Nairo was among them. He waylaid the bearer of the word as he approached the pulpit, while Cor Faron was still below. Laying a hand on Lorgar's immense bicep, he gave a nod.
"I haven't yet had time to thank you for saving my life."
"I can recall everything," Lorgar replied. He leaned close and dropped his voice. "Everything you ever did and told me. Everything that passed on this rig from the moment I set foot upon it. The talk of the guards, the whispers of the slaves. Your past as a teacher, the things you taught me. I think I understand now what Cor Faron meant when he punished me for learning the words but not the meanings. I can recall everything anyone has said to me since I was found in the desert. But your words I choose to remember." Nairo was not sure how to reply to this, but was struck by sudden concern.
"I think Cor Faron would rather fight and fail than seek victory in peace."
The slave looked over the rail to the citadel in the distance.
"And he may be right. I don't think even you could convince the guards to open the gates when they think on what we have just done to their companions."
"You will see, Nairo, how well I remember, how well I have learned." He patted the slave on the shoulder, the gesture gentle despite the huge hand that performed it. "My words are not for the guards. Nairo watched Lorgar pull his bulk into the confines of the pulpit. Corpheron emerged from below, sending Nairo scuttling away with a snarl and scowl. Circling the deck, the preacher made his way to the rail behind the driver's cab and ascended in the shade of the compartment to watch the gatehouse in the distance. The rest of those still aboard the temple rig bound pads of rags over their ears. With a crack like thunder and the hiss of a thousand serpents, Lorgar activated the address system. 243. Slaves of Taranthus, heed my words. I am Lorgar, the bearer of the word, messenger of the powers, herald of the truth. I come to you today with glad tidings, for the gaze of the powers has fallen upon you. One is coming, one who shall set us all free from the bondage of ignorance. It is not the yokes and manacles that bind you to this place. It is the fear that has been set in your hearts by the doctrines of the Covenant. The mysteries of the Empyrean have been hidden from you, cloaked in ritual and obscure language. The Ecclesiarch and his priesthood have placed themselves between you and the powers, denying you that which is in your own extent to achieve. I come not as one who will bring you to the truth, for it is already in you. I, Lorgar, am not your saviour, for you do not need saving, but from your own inhibitions. Each man and woman who hears these words knows of their righteousness and their own place in the gaze of the powers. Be thankful, then, that into your hands have been placed the means for deliverance. Show now your faith, your dedication to his cause, and the one shall descend from the Empyrean to spread the light of the truth upon us all. He does not see slaves and masters, for there is only the one above to serve, and all beneath are the servants. Not in your station shall you be judged, but in your deeds. Not for the weaknesses of the past shall you be abandoned, but accepted for the strength of the present and the promise of the future. Vengeful we shall be against those who trespass against the One, but in love and benevolence shall he arrive, and garbed in the blazing glory of the powers, the One shall walk among us, bringing peace and purpose to our hollow existence. I do not call on you to do anything save that which the One has already placed in your hearts. The One demands nothing but your prayers and love. We shall rid ourselves of these odious sacrifices and free ourselves from the ignominy of false servitude. The Church shall be reborn, and the greatness of Colchis shall be restored in the eyes of mortals and powers alike. Strike! Strike now, for eternity beckons. Be pure of faith and strong of heart, and trust your soul to the love of the One. We have nothing to lose but our chains. 244. For the remainder of morn day and into long noon, until the rest eve at the height of the sun's strength, Lorgar spoke, pausing for no rest nor food, only to take an occasional mouthful from the water bottle he had with him. The others of the caravan dozed and attended to such duties as were absolutely necessary. The converts took shifts to keep watch for any movement of the Covenant soldiers, patrolling close to the highway that was now deserted, so that they might see the first sign of a response from Varadesh. Wake cries of post-noon came, the sun bright and sharp in a cloudless sky, ready to burn through the will of the hardiest soul. Lorgar stopped talking, rousing Nairo from a half-doze that had taken him as he sat with his back against the base of the pulpit tower, ears still bound against the deafening volume of the prayer hailers. The bearer of the word held a hand above his eyes, peering against the glow of the rising sun. Nairo followed his gaze, likewise shielding himself from the brightness of the lowering orb, as though staring back into the gaze of the powers themselves. There was something different about the nearest gatehouse, though the wall facing the caravan was still shrouded in shadow. With an involuntary shout, Nairo realized that the silhouette had changed, and there was movement in the shadow. His call woke others, including Corferon, who dashed to the ladder that led to the roof of the driver's cabin, hauling himself on top with much flapping of robes. He pointed a spindly finger towards the gate of Taranthus.
"Praise the powers!" the priest declared. "See how the truth knows no barriers!"
And it was so. Across the sands poured a tide of ragged creatures, laughing and shouting with joy. Dressed in tatters, the men and women were skeletal-limbed and pot-bellied from malnourishment, but the energy of their escape was remarkable. Dozens, then hundreds, then thousands burst forth from the mines. Many fell into the sands and lifted their hands up in supplication to the sun they had not seen for long years. Others wandered, dazed over the wastes, unable to comprehend the nature of freedom. 245. Corferon quickly identified a knot of the Taranthian slaves heading directly towards the temple rig, 50 or 60 in number. He could see that they wore looted armour and bore weapons taken from their guards. Ringleaders, no doubt. Men and women likely to have their own agenda above the simple fact of freedom. He called for Axata as he descended to the main deck of the rig, and then beckoned to Lorgar. The bearer of the word clambered down from the pulpit, weary in body from his oratory, his passion momentarily spent despite his superhuman stamina.
"Assemble a greeting party,"
Corferon told Axata, directing the convert's attention to the incoming group.
"Take water and a little food. Say nothing of Lorgar, but bring them to me."
Axata looked as though he would disagree, looking to Lorgar for support. Corferon bit back a remark, sure in the knowledge that this was no time to rile his second-in-command. Lorgar shook his head.
"Do as Corferon bids. Extend our welcome. Introduce them to him and keep my nature quiet. We do not yet know whether they will be allies or enemies."
"Surely they have heard the bearer of the word and come to offer their service, as have we all," said Axata.
"Perhaps," Corferon answered quickly before Lorgar. "But they are desperate folk, and who can say what drives a person in such circumstance? Go, bring them to us."
When Axata had gathered the soldiers he needed and led them down to the sands, Corferon took Lorgar aside.
"Wise words," he said. "Our people must be united. We have seen firsthand the dangers of factions growing within our camp."
"Indeed. And I will always stand by your shoulder," replied Lorgar.
"We must do better than that, or what we have started today will become a tide that will wash us away. We are a movement now, growing in number, and others shall be jealous of that. They will try to divide us, you and I. They will take what we have built and pervert it to their mortal ends, and the Covenant will claim it for themselves. The foundations of a new tyranny in the name of a flawed ecclesiarch."
He could see his words sinking into the mind of Lorgar, and pushed home his message.
"We have one opportunity, just one chance to topple the corrupt church, and we cannot let others take it from us. More blood will be spilt, but the powers shall not allow such sacrifices to be in vain. Eternity is the reward for those who die in the name of the truth."
"So what do you propose we do?"
"We are as one. As the Ecclesiarch is the spiritual head of the Covenant, so he has the Archdeacon of Varadesh to attend to the practical matters. You are the bearer of the word, the Ecclesiarch-to-be. I shall be your Archdeacon. Axata is our gun deacon prime. As such shall all newcomers know us. To me, their bodies, to you, their souls. Inseparable, indefatigable, victorious."
Lorgar smiled.
"In the name of the truth and the one."
Corferon fought back his instinctive deflection, even though he feared his adoptive son verged on blasphemy. The visions had continued, intensified, and Lorgar was convinced that a new power was rising to sweep away the Covenant. Perhaps there was something to be learned still.
"For the truth and the one,"
Corferon assured him.